Hi there, a quick note before the episode begins. Did you know that Mija has her own audiobook with exclusive and brand new material? It's called Mija Podcast, the audiobook, an exclusive and never-before-heard collection of memoirs and reflections by her creator, Lori Martinez, about what it meant to turn her own migration story into a fiction series. When you get Ochenta's audiobooks, you're directly supporting our independent audio series productions. You can find it on Libro.fm, Apple Books, Google Play, Storytel, BookBeat, and on your favorite audiobooks app. Also available in Spanish and French.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to Mija on the Mic, where me, Mija, interviews daughters of immigrants and immigrants themselves who are making moves in their industries around the world. Today, I am so excited to invite podcast host and author and comedian and so many other things, Saria Azmat.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for having me.
So thank you so much for joining me, Saria. Thank you for existing already. Saria inspires me so much, so I'm really excited to talk to her today. So we go way back, right? I think when we met, it was maybe, I hadn't even started Ochenta yet. I was like just a freelancer, I think. So it must have been like 2017, 2018.
Yeah, I think it was 2018. Exactly. We met at this like really cool podcast festival. We just kind of kept in touch really over different questions and stuff like that. And I love that we're in different locations, but it doesn't really affect like us being able to communicate. Lori is just so generous with her time.
I was going to say that something that I connected so much with you is that like your experience as a daughter of immigrants is very similar to mine, even though we're in different places. So I do want to get into all of the podcast things and all of the book things. But before we do that, I always ask all of my guests to kind of break down what their cultural background is. So if you can kind of tell our listeners, why Saria? Where are you from?
So where am I from? I'm like, basically, what doesn't cause me to flinch when I describe myself is like British Asian. There's not a reason for that order. It's just like one of the delineations on our forms or whatever. So obviously British born in the UK and Asian because I'm brown. My family has like origins from India. But yeah, I guess because I was born in the UK, Britishness is kind of really intrinsic to who I am. And I feel like, I don't know if anybody can just be 50-50. So if I had to say, I think that the Indian side kind of, it just basically took a bit of a backseat at times because I guess I was really afraid of like having to have an arranged marriage. And so I was like, okay, if I'm more British, that might not happen.
So you actively kind of rejected that side of yourself, maybe? Would that be right to say?
I feel like you do have to sometimes, you choose sometimes, not everybody, but I chose to make a compromise. And my parents are very British as well. And so I think it wasn't something that I felt was wrong to kind of do because they were very settled in England. And so it felt okay for me to kind of do that. And I do feel like you pay a price. You know, obviously I'm not as fluent in Asian language or Urdu, Hindi as I would be. You know, it's very cheeky. You know, you take the food, you take the flavor, but you know, there's only one person, you're only one person. So there's only so much you can kind of commit to all of the other things, right? I don't know. I didn't feel bad at the time. I think also we have to survive. And I think that if you feel that survival looks good, unfortunately, like this can sound really bad, but like in Asian communities, especially outside of the UK, the British passport or being British is so like highly revered. And so it almost didn't feel like there was a need to kind of explore those Indian side of my roots. So again, maybe that's something I learned is that British culture is not like the only culture.
I think it's super interesting because everyone's experience is different and uniquely so because of whatever the context is that you grew up in. And so you grew up in London, right?
Yeah.
So you had this context where there were a lot of other Asian immigrants. And so you maybe didn't have that kind of questioning so much because you had a lot of other people who were having the same experience and maybe didn't have to ask themselves so many questions about these things. Cause it was like the Indian community is very, very present in the UK, right?
Yeah. And also, to be honest with you, I feel like all of this kind of analysis is a luxury slash privilege we've kind of grown into being able to do. But I don't think that my parents had that same luxury or privilege to do so. I think their luxury and privilege was being allowed to be in the country and then just try and work and just survive and sustain themselves and hopefully flourish and, you know, do good for their family, which was a big kind of ambition for them. So I just think, yeah, times change and like the times that we're in is to kind of be a bit more rounded and nuanced. Whereas I think I don't know that there would be space for the conversations that we're having today or that they would be welcome because the rhetoric was very much at that time, go back where you came from.
That's really interesting. So you wouldn't be able to say like what feels like most like home to you?
No, because, well, I mean, I know what it feels like to me, but also I know that there's so many caveats that come along with that. And so like in the UK, I think it's openly known to be such a diverse, basically a place where everybody, like, there's no kind of uniform way of life or kind of majority as such. Like, I think is very mixed. And a lot of people just come here for work. And that's definitely something that makes it rich and beautiful and fun. But also, if belonging and community is important to you, I'm not really sure that it ticks those boxes all the time.
So tell me about No Country for Young Women, because that's like the first entry point into your work and about you talking about these questions, because there's something really nuanced about the way that you talk about culture and how we're kind of individually and collectively affected by these immigration journeys of our families.
Yes.
So I would like to hear, like, you know, tell me about Why No Country and the title and all about it.
So basically, I was doing stand-up comedy and one of the BBC commissioners, who's really amazing, thank you for commissioning us, contacted me basically and wanted to see if I had like an idea for a podcast. They were releasing their new platform, which is now known as BBC Sounds at the time. And the idea I had was basically that I sound British, but I don't look British. And what that kind of even looks like. And we needed a co-host. So I kind of like asked if like my friend could do it, my friend Monty Onanuga. She's Nigerian descent. Our voices were the main things that people heard or noticed about us. But then basically our names are ethnic. And so we would often get asked questions like, where are you from? So they commissioned it and we were really fortunate. We had four series where we interviewed like great contributors and celebrities and guests from all walks of life. And it was really, really eye-opening in the fact that a lot of our guests who, like some of them were British, they'd moved on to like America and stuff. And they were like, well, I couldn't have these conversations when I was in the UK. So I was really surprised. But also, I don't know why, because nobody was really having these conversations in the UK. And I think it just spoke a lot about how, you know, how we have to come. Like, you can't always bring your full self. Like, people have expectations, sometimes unspoken expectations about you. And you either choose to live up to them or then choose to surprise them or kind of just be yourself. And then I think in the case of ethnic people, what that means is that you can compromise your seat at certain things, you know, whether that's your career progression or other things. Inclusivity isn't like, I think it's basically conditional. People just sometimes just want versions of us. And so I think one of the things I'm really thankful that we got to explore on No Country for Young Women was deciphering, you know, where we felt comfortable, where we had felt less comfortable, just so that people could understand. It's such a hard conversation. So I really salute you for the work that you do, because I think on the one hand, you want to give people hope, people of color, you want to give people hope that they're as important as everybody else and that things aren't as bad as they used to be and that they can thrive and that their existence is way more than just certain things that the industry or the world monetizes. Because let's face it, diversity is like, unfortunately, still monetized. So like, it's not a game to us. Like, this is just a lot of our reality and things that we've had to kind of overcome.
I have a question for you, and I think it will help also to have the listeners understand your experience a little bit more. Can you tell me maybe about an anecdote or something that best represents the way you feel on a daily basis as an Asian woman in the UK? What is a typical day maybe for you, Sadia?
I feel like my childhood was really amazing. And like I went to a school that was very diverse and I didn't really think of color that much. Like I had friends from all different backgrounds. And then when I was 19, I started wearing the hijab, which is like a head covering. And it was surprising because I thought like, because it's such a big change that I would have like loads of people ask me so many questions, but nobody did. So that was cool. But then ISIS came out and that's like not a cool boy band. That's like a really evil terrorist group. And terrorism was like a real big problem in the whole world. Like there were so many unfortunate fatalities and we were all very, very afraid of what was going on, like the way that the media was portraying it as well. And it felt like a very big divide between like Muslims basically and the rest of the world, even though like Muslims denounce terrorism and what it stands for. But because there was such a lack of understanding of what Islam was, I guess the media's sloppy portrayal of a lot of those kind of events didn't help the people who weren't so educated in different cultures or communities or religions and faiths. So I think, okay, this is probably going to answer your question. So I can't remember. I probably did wear the hijab at this point, but it's not relevant. I would have women come up to me and saying, hey, and I'd be like, hey, and they'd be like, when are you getting married? And for me, that's pretty much a big kind of memory in terms of my position in this country where white people are willing to have like surface level conversations, but they don't really want to go deeper than that. So it was obviously out of genuine interest, but...
And no context, just like expecting you with the arranged marriage or...
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Like, I feel like the Asian experience is very much coupled with marriage. And so it's like we're seen to be poster girls for marriage. And literally, look, I wish I knew where my future husband was. I don't know where he is. I don't know who he's sleeping with. I'm very upset with him. But I'm single. And yeah, it's just, I think it's been confusing sometimes because like you have this roadmap of what your life should look like as a Asian woman, even an Asian woman in the UK. But then when your life doesn't meet that, then what does that mean? Does that mean you're a bad Asian or does that mean you're a bad woman? Like, does that mean you're not sexy? Like, what does it all mean? And so, you know, I don't get asked that anymore. And I don't know if it's good or bad because I think it went from weird conversations like that to like ignoring people or being ignored because people like looked down or they hated the hijab or they didn't understand like why I wanted to look differently or what it stood for and didn't want to have those more kind of nuanced conversations. So it went from weird conversations where they were showing an interest but didn't fully understand it or were just kind of like, you know, friendly but like nothing substantial.
I would like to talk about you talk about relationships a little bit, and I know that your book is very much around your identity as a woman and also trying to navigate these cultural questions. So tell us about Sex Bomb.
Yes. So basically, it's my memoir. It's my debut book, and I was really excited to write it. Sex Bomb is everything about me. I spent 2 years like putting my heart and soul on a piece of paper, on papers, and I talk about what is the sex bomb? Because obviously we all know the title sex bomb to basically stand for like a hot mama, right? Like a really hot chick, like a desirable lady. And I, you know, I contemplate whether that could be a Muslim woman. Could a Muslim woman be a sex bomb? It's obviously tongue in cheek because I'm using like a bomb in the title, which Muslims have had like so much kind of, you know, association with terrorism and violence, etc. But sometimes it does feel like sex is weaponized, or that it can be a bit of a taboo subject. But I think the reason it was important for me to be bold and to write it was because I was just tired of like us being viewed one dimensionally and to be reduced in the media to being repressed and passive, because none of the women I know are passive women and we all kind of like a really rounded, and for so long we've never had a narrative. We've always been spoken about by the press or spoken about by other people or had massive assumptions made about us. And I really wanted the conversation to move forward beyond, are you going to get married? Like, so that we could be seen as rounded people. And so I talk about a relationship that was in, it was a bad relationship. And I talk about that in the hopes that other women, because it's not just about, obviously I'm Muslim, but it's not just a book for Muslims. It's not even just a book for women. It's a book for everybody. And we've all had heartache and we've all kind of had ups and downs. And I talk about like how I got out of that and how I picked myself up. And also like finding my self-worth, like how I found comedy. I talk about my podcast. So I answer every single question that you've ever wanted to know about a Muslim so that we can just kind of keep it moving. And it's like literally out all over the world. So anybody can buy it.
That's amazing. And I love that in the book, you're also talking about the comedy side of things, because these are obviously very serious subjects and there are so many nuances and everyone wants to, you know, say the right thing and say it in the right way. And I really appreciate that you're not afraid to kind of see the humor and how ridiculous it is that we're trying to be right all the time. So I would like to hear about, you know, how you got into comedy and maybe if you can tell me about maybe your first set. I think it'll be fun to hear.
I basically was always writing jokes. I was always being a bit of a clown. And so I found this open mic when I kind of engaged with a comedian accidentally. I kind of like found an open mic and did a gig. And the first gig actually went really well. Like you hear loads of stories about gigs where the first one people bombed. But the first gig was like for 70 people, mostly women, and they all laughed. And it was really cool. It's a funny industry. So that's how I found the podcast. And obviously I wasn't planning on doing a podcast, but it's one of those industries where you kind of just kind of try and be open to whatever opportunities come along.
How did your parents react when you wanted to be a comedian?
So I never told them, Laurie.
You mean with the book out and everything, you haven't told your parents?
No, not really, because they're really like protective. And I was really concerned about like them trying to talk me out of it at times. Like, I don't know if they would, like they might be super supportive, but also it just meant something to me. And so much of my existence seemed to be trying to please parents and stuff. And so it was the one thing that I wanted to keep for myself.
So then how do you do it? I mean, you had a whole podcast out of it. Have they ever heard the show? Have they read your book? Do they know?
All very good questions, Laurie. And you know what? I think I tried to subtly hint it, but my mom wasn't very well. So I don't think she really understood. And so I didn't want to give her more to worry about, because Muslims, like, you know, we're not allowed to even go to pubs, right? And that's where a lot of stand-up gigs take place. So I guess I didn't want to cause them concern. And so they haven't really found out, like, I guess they're not that down with the podcasting yet. So
is it something that you're, I guess, like your whole life, have you kind of had that duality where you kept this kind of other side of yourself from your family in a way?
It's really strange, because the way that the world perceives Asian families is so different to my own experience. And that's why I never try and make assumptions. So I guess, and it might be correct, like the majority of Asians, like, you know, they're very close knit, they share so much, there's big families, lots of food. But because my family came over here, which is literally just mom and dad, because they came to the UK, like they didn't have that wider setting. So it was just them. And like they really were just quite traditional. I think they just wanted me to do something that was quite kind of safe or simple and just paid the bills. And so like I really just didn't want to be in the business of trying to persuade them, because like how do you persuade your parents, your Asian parents, that I'm going to go to a pub today, I'm going to do a 5-minute gig, I might bomb and I'm not going to get paid. So it was just never something that was going to like convince them of, in my own opinion. And then like, obviously the other things came along, which were nice, but like, again, I don't know, the podcast was quite new. And so I didn't know how to explain that to them. And then like, yeah, I just felt like they got to a point where I never really felt like I needed their approval. And
so what do they think you do?
I was doing a lot of admin. I was doing some temping. And so I guess they kind of just assumed that that's what I was doing.
And you know, now as an adult, you've now written a book, you've gotten forward in your career, you're kind of putting forward, you're owning your voice. Do you feel like you'll be able to come clean one day?
I would love them to discover me, like you said, with the book or whatever, like find out themselves. But equally, I'm fine if they don't like give a shit as well. Like I literally, it's just never been something where, I don't know, there was a time where I was on Channel 4 and I tried to tell her to like put the channel on and she just didn't want to do it. So like, it's cool. Like, you know, it's fine.
So we're coming to the end now. I want to ask you some speed round questions. feel free to answer however naturally as you wish. Okay. So don't think too much about the questions. So what's your favorite food?
Chocolate.
Song you've had in your head this week?
From Time, Drake.
What is your last Google search that you are comfortable sharing?
Good question. I think, let me just Google it again. I think it's like the 16, no, I literally have it on my phone. Come on. I'm so sorry. You all like waiting. Best times to sauna lunar calendar. It should come up. Oh yeah, it's come up. It's the 17, 18 and 19 lunar days. And the reason I look it up, because there's favorable days, there's good days, there's neutral days, and then there's bad days, and then there's the worst days. So I basically didn't want to go on the worst days because that sounded like hell, and I don't want to upset my body. So yeah, that's why I look it up.
What's your star sign?
I'm a Pisces. We're like so problematic.
Okay, what is your most embarrassing dream?
Having sex with someone who was ugly.
Okay, what is your biggest dream that you had as a kid, and that if you could do anything today, what would it be?
I had a big crush on Robert Downey Jr. I would have loved to be his wife, but that didn't happen. In terms of like, I don't know, like I feel very fortunate in that I'm doing a lot of the things that I feel are kind of like almost like a dream. So like in terms of creating and in terms of doing stand-up, like obviously I would love to do stand-up on a bigger scale, like for a Netflix special or HBO special or something. That would be like a huge dream if I can hopefully get there.
All right. Thank you for your time. Tell us where we can find you.
I'm living on Instagram, literally. So please follow me. I'm at Sadia_Asmat_. You can find me on Twitter, but it's so miserable these days, so I don't post that much. And also, like, please buy my book. It's called Sex Bomb. You can get it everywhere. Like, I hate to promote just Amazon, but like, if that's where you prefer, that's where you can get it. But you can also get it at your local bookshop. You can get your independent bookshop to order it for you. They'll get it. I can also hand deliver it to you and sign it. Or if you DM me on Instagram, we can arrange for me to post you a copy. Obviously, you can pay for it. That'd be great. But yeah, I'm everywhere. Follow me.
Amazing. I always ask all the daughters of immigrants to tell us their advice. What is your advice for other women like yourself, young women, young hijabis, about, you know, starting to tell their stories and starting to take the mic and maybe doing comedy and being inspired like you?
Jesus, Laurie. Oh my God. What a big question and what an important question. So you are going to make mistakes and that shouldn't stop you from telling your story, but try and learn from your mistakes. I think you have to figure out what success means to you. Sometimes people don't know their worth. And so, you know, it's so valuable to share your story and to learn about yourself because you'll grow from this process. It won't always be easy, but it's such a highly rewarding thing to be able to kind of show for yourself.
Thank you so much, Sadia.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is Miha on the Mic, a season of reflection on our shared experiences as daughters of immigrants. Over the next couple of weeks, I'll be sharing stories like these and inviting guests to share theirs. Follow us on Instagram at Miha Podcast, that's M-I-J-A Podcast, and leave us a note if you like this story. Tune in every Wednesday for a new episode. This is a production of Studio Ochenta, a Latina-owned multilingual podcast studio dedicated to raising voices across cultures. For more from Studio Ochenta, follow us at Ochenta Podcasts on Instagram. That's O-C-H-E-N-T-A Podcast with an S on Instagram. P.S. Don't forget, this season is also about you. If you have a story you'd like to share, or if you'd like to be a guest on the show, I invite you to reach out on Instagram at Miha Podcasts and leave us a message with a short story or memory of yours that warms your heart. We'll read it out loud on the show. Hasta pronto. Ciao.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Did you know that Mija has her own audiobook with exclusive and brand new material? It's called Mija Podcast, the audiobook, an exclusive and never-before-heard collection of memoirs and reflections by her creator, Lori Martinez, about what it meant to turn her own migration story into a fiction series. When you get Ochenta's audiobooks, you're directly supporting our independent audio series productions. You can find it on Libro.fm, Apple Books, Google Play, Storytel, BookBeat, and on your favorite audiobooks app. Also available in Spanish and French.